Good morning. We certainly want to extend a warm welcome once again to those that are visiting with us today and appreciate so much your being here with us for our worship time together. Today is our first in-homes small group meeting that'll be taking place in homes throughout the city here today following our worship gathering. And we will be discussing in those groups how to apply and put into practice the content of the sermon this morning. If you've not already joined a small group, I want to really encourage you to do that this morning. You can find all the information on a bulletin board across from the elevator out in the hallway out here if you'd like to join a small group today. And I would remind all of our small group leaders, if you've not yet posted the time of your meeting on that bulletin board, please do so as you're leaving the assembly this morning so our visitors can see that. There will also be a group that meets here at the building at the regular time at 6 p.m. tonight, a smaller group meeting here. And if you choose to be a part of that, we invite you to come back to be a part of that gathering. I want us to begin with a word of prayer this morning, specific to the content of the sermon that we're going to study together. So would you bow with me? Our Father in heaven, your name is holy and is worthy of all of our praise. Because you have offered it to us, in faith we come to you through Jesus, and we celebrate this morning that we are your children, having been born again of water and the Spirit. And we thank you for the Holy Spirit's work in us on a daily basis as believers, to be shaping us and molding us to be more what we were designed and made to be, after your likeness and your image. We know, Father, that even though that is our heart's desire, we still feel the continual battle with ourselves as we struggle in a fallen world and still even struggle with our own fallen nature. And so we confess this morning to you our sins, and we acknowledge our complete dependence upon you and your grace for our salvation and our spiritual strength. Father, I ask this morning that as you prophesied through Malachi, that the forerunner of Jesus, what he would do, I ask you, Father, to do it again. That you would turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and turn the hearts of the children to the fathers. We live in a culture, Father, where there seems more and more of a wedge that is being driven between us. And I pray, Father, that through Jesus you would bring us together. That you would help us to realize the value of what we have to offer one another, regardless of our experience in living. Help us that are younger to recognize the value of the wisdom of experience and the contributions that can be made to better our lives through the lessons that have been learned by those that have gone before us. And I pray, Father, that you would help those of us that are older to see the value of the enthusiasm, the innovation, the creativity, the excitement of those that are younger, that are traveling behind us. Help us to value one another and to come together and to learn the lessons that you have placed before us as we encounter relationships with each other. We ask it all in Jesus Christ's beautiful name. Amen. Are you worried about the next generation? A lot of people are. A lot of us look around us and we see the direction that things are going, and we see the attitudes and the demeanors and behaviors of those that are younger in our culture, and we're concerned. We're worried, perhaps. But I want to ask you this morning, regardless of what age you are, as you look at those that are traveling life's journey behind you, what are you doing to help them? What are you doing personally, individually? What are you doing to invest in the next generation? It is all too easy to be reactionary, to be reactive about the ills of and the mistakes and the missteps of those that go behind us, chalking it up to immaturity or inexperience. But what are you doing proactively to make a difference in those that go and are traveling behind you? The Bible presents an idea that I'm afraid too often we have lost sight of. It is a crucial idea for the way that God has planned in His wisdom for us to all travel together and grow together in our faith and in our walk with Christ. It is a concept that we might call intergenerational mentoring. And that's what I want to talk to you about for the next few minutes. Intergenerational mentoring. Paul would tell a young preacher, Timothy, the secret of how to pass on faith and the Christian belief system to the next generation. In 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, he said, "Look out among yourselves and find those behind you that are faithful, that you can entrust the faith to, and they will in turn entrust it to others." You see, the Christian religion, the Christian faith, is a taught faith. It is one that is an entrusting of our convictions and our beliefs and our ethics that have been given us by Jesus the Christ. It is something we must pass on. It is something we must entrust to those behind us. It is something we must invest in and give to others. It is a taught faith. We've got to show each other how to do the Christian life. Paul talked to another young preacher in the book called Titus in chapter 2. He talks about the relationships we should have with each other in the church, that the older men should watch their behavior and should live lives that are consistent with what Jesus taught. But older men should teach younger men. And older women, you should watch the behavior of your life to make sure that you're living consistent with Jesus. But don't just look out for yourself. Older women teach the younger women. We see throughout the New Testament there's supposed to be a respect that those of us that are younger have for those that are more experienced in the faith. We're to look up to those that are older for their wisdom and the contributions that they can make from their experience and lessons learned that can help us not repeat the errors that they made. And so there's a symbiotic relationship. There's a relationship of give and take, an intergenerational learning that is to take place between the older and the younger and the older in the body of Christ. What is mentoring? There's many different ways perhaps we could define the word, but for our purposes this morning, I would define mentoring as where you as an individual choose somebody, maybe an individual, or maybe a small group of individuals that are behind you chronologically in life's journey. You choose an individual or a group of individuals behind you and relationally invest in that person or those groups of that group of individuals. Investing in them to help advise, train, and guide those that come behind you. Mentoring is found throughout the Bible. You see this relationship with Elijah and Elisha. You see this kind of relationship with Moses and Joshua. You see this kind of mentoring with Jesus and a selected group of individuals that come to be known as his apostles, that he focuses in on to mentor and guide and inspire and train to take the mantle of his teaching to the world. You see this with people like Paul and Timothy, Paul and Titus. A mentoring, looking behind you. Who is behind you in your life that you are intentionally and deliberately trying to invest in relationally and help them and guide them and advise them through life? Who are you investing in the next generation? I'm convinced that it does need to be something very intentional. I like what Tim Elmore has said. He says, the more time that is spent with fewer people equals greater kingdom impact. In other words, sometimes we think, well, I'll just try to have a good influence on everybody I come in contact with. What Elmore is suggesting is, if you're going to be serious about having a big impact in the kingdom, you need to choose some specific individuals to really pour into, to really invest in. Who are you mentoring? I'm convinced that in the current climate of our culture, in society, and in the current climate of our culture in the church, there has never perhaps been a greater time when intergenerational mentoring is more needed. And at the same time, there has never perhaps been a time when it has been less done. It's time for us to be serious about intergenerational mentoring. Now, I want us to turn to a story in the Old Testament that I think vividly illustrates this principle and gives us, within the story, actually multiple principles of how to do intergenerational mentoring well. And it's in Genesis chapter 48. It was read for us a moment ago. I would encourage you to look there. We're going to highlight a couple of verses as we move through the text. Let me give you kind of the background. Let me give you the historical context of what's happening here in Genesis 48. God had chosen Abraham to be a man through whom he would bless all nations. Abraham, of course, has descendants, and we come to the point in the story of one of Abraham's descendants, Jacob. Jacob, whose name would eventually be changed or by God to Israel, has a big family. He has 12 sons, and among those sons, there's one, Joseph, that he has a special affinity for. And the brothers are jealous of the relationship that Joseph has with his father Jacob. And of course, we see as we read through the book of Genesis that the brothers conspire to make their father believe that Joseph has been killed by a wild animal. They sell him into slavery. He's taken to Egypt, where he spends the next 20 years, 20 plus years of his life in a strange and foreign culture. Growing up now, from the time he was a teenager being sold into slavery at about age 17, in the formative years of his life, and as he becomes an adult, he is isolated and separated from his heritage, from his family. That would have an impact on you. That would shape the person that you become. For all practical purposes, although his heritage is Jewish, Joseph grows up in the ways of living as an Egyptian. Now, as we fast forward in the story, we see that as God would prophesy through dreams given to Pharaoh, the Pharaoh of Egypt, a tremendous famine overtakes the known world. As a result of that famine, people from all other nations begin to come to Egypt to try to find food. And thankfully, Egypt has food because Joseph listened to a vision God gave him about this was about the coming famine, and preparations were made, and Egypt has plenty of grain to spare. Among those that come to Egypt looking for food in the midst of this famine is none other than Joseph's family, some of his brothers. Through a series of events, we find that Joseph reveals his true identity, that he is their long-lost brother. And finally, his father, who loved him dearly, is moved to weeping when he finds and discovers that the son that he thought had been lost has been found. And he's ruling in Egypt. Joseph sins for his father, Israel, Jacob, to be brought to Egypt to live out the final days of his life. And when we pick up in the story in chapter 48 of Genesis, the father, the patriarch, Jacob or Israel, is now extremely advanced in age, and he is sick and he is dying. And his favorite son, Joseph, along with Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, the two grand boys, come to the bedside of their dying father and grandfather. And that's where we pick up. After this, Genesis 48 verse 1, Joseph was told, "Behold, your father is ill." So he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and it was told to Jacob, "Your son Joseph has come to you." Then Israel, that is Jacob, summoned his strength and sat up in his bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a company of peoples and will give this land to your offspring after you for an everlasting possession.' And now your two sons, who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, are mine." When it comes to, I want you to see from this story the idea of intergenerational mentoring and how that even in his advanced old age and in his sickness, Jacob is concerned about those that are coming behind him. And he is investing in them. In fact, we'll see as we continue reading, he's going to bless these boys. And he's going to charge them with the same promise that God had given to him and to his forefathers. How can we relationally invest in those that come behind us in intergenerational mentoring? Notice the first thing that Jacob does. Principle number one we see here in verse 5. If you're going to be a mentor to someone behind you, you have got to acknowledge the cultural differences that separate you. Did you see that? He acknowledged it. He said, "Joseph, you had two boys in Egypt long before I came to you." And he certainly, there would have been a lot of differences between Ephraim and Manasseh and their grandfather, Jacob. There would have been a lot of things they didn't understand about each other, a lot of different language, relationally and culturally, that they did not understand. In fact, Jacob and all of his forefathers in their occupation had been shepherds. And if you look at the last verse of chapter 46, Joseph reveals to Pharaoh and he reveals to us that Egyptians hate shepherds and find them detestable and don't want to have anything to do with them. Now, don't you think that mentality probably had worked its way into Ephraim and Manasseh's minds? You want to talk about a cultural divide, a generational gap. There was one between Jacob and his two grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh. But look at what this wise mentor does. He claims them as his own. Joseph, these boys that you were born to you long before I came to Egypt, they are mine. They are mine. Principle number one, as a mentor, you got to acknowledge the cultural differences of those that come behind you and work to understand those differences. and then claim the next generation as my people. Now, they're different from me, but they're mine. We've got to claim them. I'm so glad when I look at my life that there were some that were ahead of me that claimed me as my own, as their own, even though I was dramatically different than them. I think about the investment that was made, that was made in me that has now contributed to the person that I've become today, and I'm eternally grateful that they didn't isolate me or dismiss me or blow me off because they didn't understand me or where I came from. But they claimed me as their own. I'll never forget Robbie and Sherry, a beautiful couple that were years and years ahead of me. They already were married and had children of their own, and I was just a teenager. And I remember that couple at the church, the little country church where I grew up, how that they invested in young people. They would take us on canoe trips. We didn't have a youth minister, no youth program, but they had a family of their own, but they invested in all of the youth of that church, taking us on canoe trips and having a Halloween party where I can remember him taking the whole bucket of water that the drinks had been in, the ice water, and running people down and dumping it on them and showing, I can have fun with you. I'm claiming you as my own. And it made a tremendous impact. That's the first thing I think we need to remember, is the lesson from Jacob is acknowledge the cultural difference, try to understand it, and then claim the next generation as these are my people. We as in the church are called to impart life to the next generation. And we must not forget it. Another principle we see in verses 7 through 12. Beginning in verse number 7, Jacob begins to tell these two boys, after he claims them, he says, "As for me, when I came from Padan, to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath," that is Bethlehem. I want you to notice how vulnerable that this older man is willing to be. He is willing to be transparent, vulnerable, and honest with two younger boys. Notice what he doesn't do. He doesn't pridefully say, "Now you boys, you've grown up all your life in Egypt, and you live this kind of life I don't understand. I don't know what that's about. But I tell you what, you're in this family, and a promise was made by the God of heaven to your forefather Abraham, and you're in that line, and you better get with it." He doesn't do that. Notice what he does. He's open and vulnerable and honest. Let me just speak to, I can say those of us that are older because all of us are older than somebody behind us, right? All right, so for those of us, think about it, for those of us that are older and have those that are behind us, I'm going to tell you part of the reason why sometimes those behind us do not have any respect for us that are older. Respect is not something you can demand. It is something you must earn. And the way we earn it is by being real with people. Let them see us. Be open. Look at what Jacob does. He talks about, and you can hear the tears in his voice, "I lost my wife, Rachel, that I loved so dearly. I worked 14 long years for her. And I lost her on the way." You can hear how that event shaped the man that he became. And he, out of the gate, the first words out of his mouth to these boys is a statement of being real, not being positional. not authoritarian position, but he gets down on a level of humanizing himself before these boys. Don't you think that made an impact on them? Don't you think that made them, got their attention? You know, they were over in the corner when they walked in with Jacob. They were over there looking at their iPad, you know. They were playing a game, and then all of a sudden he starts saying this and it gets their attention. Because he's real and he's open and he's honest with them. I think that's a lesson we need to learn as mentors, being real, being transparent with the next generation with our emotions, with our weaknesses. You don't have to look back very far in the book of Genesis to see that Jacob made a lot of missteps. And then also be honest about your faith. Verse 8, when Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, "Who are these?" Joseph said to his father, "These are my sons whom God has given me here." And he said, "Bring them to me, please, that I may bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. So Joseph brought them near, and he kissed them, and he embraced them. Look how vulnerable he's being with his emotions. You want to have an impact on those that are coming behind you? You want to make a difference in this world? Be vulnerable and open and real so that you can have an influence on those that come behind you. Verse number 11. And Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face, and behold, God has let me see your offspring also." Then Joseph removed them from his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth, and he worshiped. These boys saw the faith of this man, as he was not ashamed to bow down and worship his God before them. Some of us as fathers are too proud to even sing in the worship assembly with our children looking on. Don't be too proud to be real about your faith to God and let your children see you bowing down and worshiping if you want to have an impact. I think about in my life a mentor. I think about Ed. Ed was a man that I met whenever I was just a young man starting out preaching, and he poured into me and invested in me. I can remember how he demonstrated in his life how powerful it can be when you're just open and transparent for people to see. In his younger life, Ed had lived a pretty wild life. He'd gotten mixed up in alcohol and drugs and kind of the hippie movement, and he had at one point lived homeless in his car. He'd almost destroyed his marriage at one point, and God redeemed him from all of that. And I'm going to tell you something. When that man got before that little church that I preached for before coming to Maryville, and he led prayer, and before he would lead prayer, when he would talk at the Lord's table and just be honest about his life, it made an impact. And it changed and melted the hearts of people because he was open. I can remember him coming up to me on several occasions, and his thing was he would never ask, "How are you doing?" or "How's it going?" He would say, "How's your spirit?" He was wanting to know something deeper about you. And it makes an impact when you're the kind of mentor that is real and transparent with the next generation, with your emotions, with your weaknesses, and in your worship. But I want you to notice now from the other direction very quickly, what about as those of us that are younger? And all of us can say that because maybe there's one or two exceptions, but almost everybody in this room can say you're younger because there is somebody here that's older than you. For those of us that are younger, what can we learn about learning lessons, and what kind of way should we position ourselves in trying to learn the lessons of those that are trying to mentor us, those that are ahead of us, that have something to teach us? Well, first of all, notice verses 15 and 16. And he, that is Jacob, blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys. And in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." Look at what Jacob does here. He is framing for these two boys the story of their family. He is saying to them, "You are part of a bigger story. You have a part to play in this bigger story." He's saying to them, "You have come from something very special, and it is your responsibility. It's now on your shoulders to help us carry this thing further." I think as those of us that are being mentored by those that are older than us, one thing that we need to learn is how to honor our story. And let me tell you, you can honor our story of faith and also acknowledge the weaknesses of our story. Acknowledge the mistakes that have been made, the missteps that have been made. Because you look back at Jacob's life, and for the most part, Abraham and Isaac, they had it pretty well together. They made a few mistakes along the way, but you get to Jacob, and man, it's misstep after misstep. You can acknowledge those things that could have been done better and that need to be done better. But at the same time, honor the core of our story. Learn the lessons of our people. Embrace your identity as a part of this larger story. Own it. And then help us write the next chapter. Quickly, principle 4. In verses 17 through 20, Joseph saw his father lay his right hand on the head of Ephraim, and it displeased him, and he took his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Now, basically, for time's sake, let me summarize what's going on here. It was customary in that day and time that Jacob should have put his right hand on the older son's head, and that the brunt of the responsibility to carry on the family name would go to him, while he would put his other hand on the younger boy's head. But what Jacob does here is something rather startling. He crosses his hands, putting his right hand on the younger boy's head. And you wonder, what is the significance of this? And there's no doubt quite a bit of significance theologically to what is going on here. But for the purposes of today's thought, I want us to think about this. As someone being mentored by someone older than you, you've got to be willing to take advice from those that are ahead of you and also listen to criticism. You've got to be willing to be shaped and molded. You see, it might be, I don't know what was going on in the mind of God, but God might have known that that older boy would be rather arrogant and prideful about his position, and he needed to be humbled. And God might have known, for all I know, that that younger boy had somewhat of a complex about his own capabilities and abilities, and God knew that boy needed to be built up. And so we see Jacob crossing his hands. Sometimes what we need as those that are mentoring us, what we need as those that are younger in the next generation, what we need, let's be honest, is we need some encouragement and we need some constructive criticism. And we have to learn to be able to listen to both, be willing to be shaped, be willing to be sharpened. We need to all surround ourselves with people who are for us and are so for us in encouragement and in investing that they're willing to be honest with us and speak truth into our lives when we need to hear it. There is a friend that loves deeper than a brother. And iron does sharpen iron. But sometimes a mentor goes deeper than just a friend. Because usually friends will just tell you what you want to hear. But a mentor cares so much for you that they not only will build you up, but they'll tell you the hard truth at times that you don't want to hear, but will make you be better as a result of hearing it. We need to surround ourselves with people like that and seek those that can mentor us no matter what stage of life that you're in. Do you really want to make a difference in our world? I think we all want to feel like we're making a difference. Do you want to count for something? Do you want to make sure that when you leave this earth that you have left it with something worthwhile? Do you want to have a lasting legacy? Then I want to say that maybe one of the most important things you can do is choose a mentor and choose somebody behind you that you can mentor. All of us need a Paul and a Timothy. All of us, regardless of how old or young you are, you need somebody that is just above you in the next life stage, that is traveling the path before you, that you can learn from. And all of us need to choose someone just behind us in the next life stage behind, that we can impart the same type of wisdom to. I like the old Greek proverb, and I'm going to leave you with it. This is not from the Bible. This is just a proverb from history. A society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they will never sit in. Are you planting those kinds of trees? Are you making those investments? And are you practicing intergenerational mentoring? We've got a wonderful way that you can be a part of doing just that. And Benjamin's going to tell us a little bit about that in just a few minutes, about how you can choose someone to pour into and to help the next generation. And so you'll want to listen closely to that in just the next few minutes. But this morning, let me ask you, you may feel aimless, you may feel lost, you may feel without direction in life, and you're looking for somebody to guide you. I want to say to you that there are people here that have been traveling the path of faith for a while that can help be a mentor to you and help lead you down the path of discipleship. Just come talk with me, and I can find somebody to partner you with that can help open the Bible with you and help you see what God is calling for you in your life. If you're ready to obey Jesus, we'd love to help you with that. If you need prayers, we've got shepherds of this flock that this group has chosen that are men of that kind of experience that would love to pray with you. There'll be one down front and some in the library for private prayer. If we can help you, come to Jesus as we stand and as we sing.